hissing sound may have been the air escaping from a flattening economy. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Economic growth in America was a lot slower this winter into spring than it was fall to winter, when even then growth wasn't that spectacular. There was news today that gross domestic product, which measures money transactions throughout the economy, went up at an annual rate of just 0.5%. Let's go right to Diane Swonk, the founder of DS Economics in Chicago. Hello, Diane.
Good morning.
What happened to my GDP here? I gave it to them for safekeeping at 1.4%, and they give it back here at 0.5, half a percent.
Yeah, you're losing something here, isn't it? It was a trifecta of weakness in the red, that is, and we saw declines in our loss in trade, inventories, and investment. And I think that's really important that we saw it across the board. These were all very interlinked. It's areas that have hit the manufacturing sector. We've seen it in our profits as well.
I don't understand the trade part of it, though. Most of our trade is inward. How much do we really export overseas? And that really is enough to affect the overall rate of economic growth?
What's really important is the linkage between investment and trade. What we're seeing is not only that we export abroad, we also get a lot of profits, a disproportionate amount of profits from abroad. And when they soften, it comes back and haunts us as lower investment. This goes beyond the bust in the oil industry. This is a more broader-based sort of weakness that we're seeing creeping in from the fact that we are not an island. We do suffer storms that emanate from abroad and hit our own shores.
And this could translate eventually to our labor market.
Absolutely. This is one of the places we've already seen weakness in manufacturing employment, and we want to see some bit of a comeback. This is an area where the strong dollar has had a major impact, and it's one of the reasons that the Fed stayed on the sidelines at their meeting yesterday.
Diane Swonk at DS Economics, thank you very much.
Thank you.
There may be way too many department stores in America. Maybe 800, one-fifth of the big stores that anchor shopping malls. Our real estate consulting firm Green Street Advisors sees this as a kind of corporate bloat, although bringing the efficiency of retailers back to the levels of 10 years ago would cost jobs. Visits to actual stores fell in 2015, with online competition part of the challenge. From the Marketplace desk at OPB, Mitchell Hartman looks at retail's challenge.
Analyst Garrick Brown at commercial real estate firm Cushman & Wakefield says more stores are closing this year than at any time since the Great Recession.
Can you survive in this environment where you have to build your web presence? You know, if you're a chain like an Abercrombie, there's still room for you, but you don't need 1,100 units, maybe 700 or 600 stores.
E-commerce strategist James Keller has thought a lot about this brave new retail world. She headed up Walmart.com's mobile user experience team. She's consulted for Amazon and Starbucks.
People who are going to succeed recognize the nuances in how people want to purchase their particular product.
We're surfing retail websites on the big screen computer in Keller's home office in Portland. Her dog, Chewbacca, keeps her company when she shops. One of Keller's favorite sites is an upscale apparel brand, Icebreaker, specializing in wool sweaters and accessories.
They're a lifestyle brand, right? Tattooed guys, young, hip people saying, not your grandfather's woolly sweater. They describe their physical retail locations as touch labs because a lot of people hear wool and they think sort of itchy and scratchy.
Keller says for a tactile item like this, store and website should work in tandem, a teaser and a closer, the store to see and touch, the website to purchase in your pajamas. Same for other products where color or fit are crucial. Think yarn, furniture, or bathing suits. One challenge for online retailers is that web shoppers don't stumble on items they weren't even looking for and buy them, as often happens in a physical store.
Kind of like going to Nordstrom Rack, where you're never quite sure what you're going to find, but it might be interesting.
Keller says Amazon does a good job of recommending related items. Pinterest is great for this, too. But she doubts whether online sales engines will ever fully match the serendipity of a really good shopping spree. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
The NFL draft starts today, okay, but did you know why the draft has gone from closed-door meeting to major public spectacle? In addition to the TV, there's also a big festival where the draft takes place. How do we get here? From Chicago, Nova Safo explains.
The NFL draft used to be a bunch of huddled team officials wheeling and dealing over college players turning pro. Nobody paid attention, says Rodney Ford, professor of sports management at the University of Michigan.
Used to be only sports writers cared. They would hang around the hotel where the draft was going on.
Today, an area of downtown Chicago the size of 20 football fields is home to an NFL festival. The draft will also be televised nationally.
The draft's become a huge spectacle.
Dan Lebowitz heads the Center for the Study of Sport and Society at Northeastern University. He says spectacle is now part of the NFL's business model.
That is sort of consistent with the way in which TV contracts have blown up, particularly in college football and in the pro leagues.
TV has intensified fan interest, which Rodney Ford says has opened up new opportunities for commerce.
As soon as that player is drafted, shirts go on sale.
Chicago officials say the city also benefits, claiming last year's draft netted the city $80 million in tourism and spending. In Chicago, I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
Thancs, Nova. And in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.